Hello, everyone. I'm Katie O'Connor, Director of Policy Development and Programming at the American Constitution Society. Thanks so much for joining us for today's Voting Rights Litigation Update Call. I have just a couple of housekeeping items before we get to the substance. First, please note that today's call is being recorded, and we'll be providing a link to the recording after the call. Second, we have reserved some time at the end of the call for Q&A, and we'll give instructions for asking questions at that time. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with ACS, we are a national network of lawyers, scholars, law students, judges, and policymakers who believe that the law should be a force to improve the lives of all people. ACS works for positive change by shaping debate on vitally important legal and constitutional issues through the development and promotion of high-impact ideas. If you support these efforts and are not a formal part of our network, I encourage you to become a member today. And now it's my pleasure to introduce today's speakers. Anita Earls is the founder and executive director of the Southern Coalition for Social Justice. Prior to founding the coalition, she was director of advocacy at the UNC Center for Civil Rights and director of the Voting Rights Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. During the Clinton administration, Ms. Earls was a deputy assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. And for the first 10 years of her career, Anita litigated civil rights cases as a partner with Ferguson, Stein, Wallace, Adkins, Gresham, and Sumter in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jerry Hebert is the executive director and director of litigation at the Campaign Legal Center. He joined the Legal Center in 2004. From 1973 to 1994, Jerry served in the Department of Justice, where he served in many supervisory capacities, including acting chief, deputy chief, and special litigation counsel in the voting section. In 1994, Jerry left the DOJ and opened a solo practice in Alexandria, specializing in election law and redistricting. From 1994 to 1995, Jerry served as a part-time staff attorney for the National Office of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. And from 1999 to 2002, Jerry served as general counsel to the National Redistricting Project for Congressional Democrats. And finally, Ezra Rosenberg is the co-director of the Voting Rights Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Prior to joining the Lawyers Committee, he was a partner in the Princeton office of Deckert, where he was actively involved in pro bono representations, including several significant cases with the Lawyers Committee. Ezra began his career with the New Jersey Department of the Public Advocate, focusing on special project criminal appeals and arguing several times before the New Jersey Supreme Court. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ezra.
Thanks, Katie. I assume everyone can hear me. Katie, can you hear me?
We can.
Great. I understand that the purpose of today is to bring everyone up to date with what's been happening after the United States Supreme Court's decision in Shelby. After Shelby, as you know, those jurisdictions that had been covered under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act no longer had to provide notice and get approval from either the Attorney General or a court before they implemented changes in voting practices, and no longer had to bear the burden of proving that those changes discriminated against racial and ethnic minorities in their participation in the political process. That meant that voting rights litigators, such as those of us on the call, have to be more vigilant. We have to find out what's going on, and we have to carry a heavier burden in challenging certain practices. But post-Shelby, as it was prior to Shelby, the voting rights landscape focuses on how to ensure that racial and ethnic minorities get to participate without discrimination in the political process. But I emphasize that the voting rights landscape is not limited to those jurisdictions previously covered by Shelby. Discriminatory acts are unfortunately not limited by state boundaries, and we're going to be talking about a couple jurisdictions that were outside of the Section 5 jurisdictions. We're going to be talking about two major sets of voting litigation cases. One is could be described as vote dilution cases which deal with how election districts are set up in ways that limit minorities in their opportunity to elect candidates of their choice. Often those cases arise in the redistricting context, and Anita will be addressing some of those. The second major area are election administration cases, also known as vote denial or vote suppression cases. Those are cases where governments have made it more difficult for members of minority groups to vote by placing barriers such as to registering to vote or the casting of ballots. And I'm going to be dealing with three examples of those kinds of vote denial cases. The first concerns barriers to registration, and that's a case that we filed along with other civil rights groups such as the Brennan Center and the ACLU and Project Vote in Washington, and it's called the League of Women Voters versus Newby. As a matter of background, for several years, the Lawyers Committee and other civil rights groups had been fighting efforts by Kansas, Arizona, and other states to impose unnecessary and burdensome proof of citizenship requirements on those who wanted to use the federal form to register to vote. The federal form has always had a place on it to state that to swear that you are a citizen. Kansas wanted to impose document requirements which burden those who don't have the underlying documents such as birth certificates. This issue went to the United States Supreme Court, which held that the Election Assistance Commission, which had authority over the federal form, that authority was supreme over the state requests. And that was the case of Arizona versus Intertribal Council of Arizona. And the court, actually it was Justice Scalia, said that if Kansas or the other states want to have this requirement added to the federal form, they have to request the Election Assistance Commission. They did make that request, and the Election Assistance Commission said no. And they said no because they felt in compliance with the National Voter Registration Act that submission of documentary evidence of citizenship was not necessary for states to enforce their eligibility requirements. Kansas appealed that decision, and the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the decision of the Election Assistance Commission in the case called Kobach versus Election Assistance Commission. That was just in 2015. U.S. Supreme Court refused to take that case, and we thought that this was the end of the issue. Unfortunately, in January of this year, the newly appointed executive director of the Election Assistance Commission, a man named Brian Newby, perhaps not coincidentally, formerly an election official of Kansas, unilaterally approved a new request by Kansas, Georgia, and Alabama to amend the state instructions that are part of the federal form so as to allow those states to require proof of citizenship for people who use the federal form to register to vote. We, with the other civil rights organizations, filed a suit in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia under the Administrative Procedure Act, alleging that, first of all, Mr. Newby did not, as the executive director, have the authority to make that decision, because under the statute that created the commission, the Help America's American Vote Act, the vote of three commissioners are needed. And the reason three commissioners are needed is because the commission is made up of two Republicans and two Democrats. So the idea is that every decision has to be bipartisan. Secondly, we said that Mr. Newby did not have the authority to make that decision because he was reversing the policy of the commission that had been in place for decades, that proof of citizenship was not required. And finally, we said that even if he had that authority, he did not make the required finding of necessity under the National Voter Registration Act. We applied for a temporary restraining order that was denied. The judge instead set a hearing for a preliminary injunction. In order to prevail on a preliminary injunction, we have to prove probability of success on the merits and that our clients are being irreparably harmed. We have fully briefed that issue, and actually the last brief went in last night at midnight, although there might be some a few more briefs before this is all done, and we're awaiting a decision from the court. Interestingly, the Department of Justice, which represents the Election Assistance Commission,